Paper level.
Yep, absolutely fine. Right, okay, so where did your career begin?
Where? When? Conception? Birth?
Well, obviously
then we'll
that,
skip but... the first 15, 16 years. I used to do a lot of impressions at school, you know, the teachers, all that kind of stuff. Sort of pretty standard fare. I mean, they always used to say that, you know... people become comedians to stop being bullied. It was only after I became a comedian that people started to bully me. So clearly I had to learn very fast to be a better comedian. But sports commentators, I used to do a lot of, you know, there's Richie Perez and the Bill McLarens in the back of the bus on the way to the games of rugby you used to play, and teachers. And then that sort of spilled over into, I was at university in London and there was a thriving cabaret circuit in London at the time. And also the Edinburgh Festival, of course, let's not forget. So it was a combination of Edinburgh festivals. And when I was beginning, sort of, we're talking about sort of early 80s here, but from 79 to 82 in Edinburgh, in that 3-year stretch, you would have seen Stephen Fry, Emma Thompson, Tony Slattery, Clive Anderson, Rory McGrath, Rick Mayle, Alexi Sale, just so many of the people who just went on to dominate comedy in the next 20 years. Rowan Atkinson, of course, as well, Griffith Rhys Jones, just so many of the great names. And so I was obviously inspired by that. And those are the shows that I went to see when I was younger. And the cabaret circuit was just opening up because pubs, theatres, they changed their licensing. So instead of doing plays, they were doing stand-up comedy. So I was in London sort of at the right time. And that's kind of how it began. And the first time I went on radio was ironically after our Edinburgh Fringe show.
And Terry Wogan, it was. He did a little show called... Cutoff at the Fringe. And old Rory Radner, who does... That's the kind of voices you wouldn't expect. So there's a little thing we discovered. This young man, who's quite... He's got a talent for doing voices like myself. And that's how it all started.
And do you ever sit there... I mean, just doing that impression of Terry Wogan, do you ever sit there and think, you know, is there you somehow blurt into an impression out of the odd moment?
I used to. I mean, it is instinctive, of course. And it means, I mean, any impressionist, they enjoy voices, they enjoy characters. And so, you know, part of you can't resist that temptation. But no, as you get older and become human, as opposed to just, as I was as a child, sort of just showing off all the time, you temper that. But no, I mean, it's always there. I mean, impressionists, to some extent, are fans. And you just find yourself, you're watching, I know, something like The X Factor, and you see Louis Walsh, and you go, it's a great voice. I love your voice. I love what you're doing there. But you know, I want people to go out and vote for you and buy your record. It's an absolutely great record. And you think, oh I can do that voice. Or William Hague, you know, when he does something, talks about the people of Somalia, which the Prime Minister thinks Somalia is a wine waiter. You know, so you were always I know it's not a verbal tick exactly. It's just something you've always enjoyed doing.
Yeah. I mean, what makes a good impression? For example, I know that Gordon Brown, when you do him, the jaw or the hands and...
Well, I think essentially it's if you distill it down so that the voice... You've kind of only got one shot at it, really. You've got to get... People go, I know instantly who it is. And if you've got a killer line as well, and I often do Michael Howard, and the Michael Howard one was always, it's all right, I'm not going to hurt you. Or... For example, I can't do the David Blunkett one because it involves swearing. But it's neat if you can get one sort of killer line, and it has to be sort of recognisable and somebody who's a real character. I mean, you have a real problem with the cabinet at the moment because, you know, they are sort of essentially these non-entities like Patrick McLaughlin and Owen Paterson, and, you know, I don't think even Cameron knows who half of them are. I think he just sort of goes to the cabinet and says, right, I think we're going to talk about ashtrays today. Is it? No, it's ashtrays, isn't it? Right, okay. I've forgotten your name. You're Theresa May, isn't it? I'm sorry, is that... Oh, sorry, it was the moustache put me off. Is it November? You've done very well. You need characters. That's that's good. You need characters, you need material. And, I mean, I've been talking to a voice coach recently. And he's been helping with Miliband because... the thing about that is... it wanted to be me. Yeah. There's a pleading tone about being a Labour leader. And being a Labour leader, they want to lose elections. They don't want to lose elections, they want to win elections. And the way that he says L, like leaf, or responsibility, or the people of this country, are crying out four are changing at the way he holds onto these letters. And it's been really exciting to work on some new characters with somebody who I consider bounce off. In the old days, it was when we were working with Bird and Fortune. So, it's good fun.
Mm-hmm. In terms of, I know you were diagnosed with ADHD. Has that in any way held you back?
No, you could argue the opposite, in fact. I mean, the thing is my own diagnosis. I've retrospectively self-diagnosed myself with it. But what it means, I mean, it's my greatest friend and my worst enemy, in the sense that the friend is that it's having a short attention span, it's being sort of quite impulsive, but also it's making those kind of leaps in your mind, which help comedians because it's making those snappy connections. And when your brain isn't entirely logical all the time and it jumps the rails, that's useful. But in terms of being able to concentrate, in terms of being able to focus, it's not always helpful. But I think probably a lot of people who have ADHD, it's a friend and an enemy. Brecht used to have, how you had a wonderful expression about oysters. Oysters only produce a pearl because they've got an infection. And I think he argued the character that he is in Galileo. I think the character argued that he wanted oysters to be healthy and not produce pearls anymore. But I think there is something about that particular thing, hyperactivity and the ability to sort of just bounce around mentally like a sort of pinball machine, that is quite useful.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to talk about Strictly Come Dancing. But you were there, and it was your favourite.
Well done. How about that?
How was that?
I mean, it was fantastic. It was a great experience. I've been very lucky. There's a couple of the great television experiences I've had. One was Who Do You Think You Are, where it really does connect you with your past. And Strictly, it's literally a ball. I mean, at first you think, should I do this? This is like another reality show, but it's not. It's actually a great party. Mm-hmm. It's a tremendously bonding experience with the people that you meet on those shows, because there's nothing quite like the adrenaline rush of, you know, being on that dance floor in front of that many people, and it just, and you're learning a discipline. It's hard training, you know, 20 or 30 hours a week, and I think it's an entirely positive thing. I think there is a school of thought that says that, you know, you should be learning stuff all your life, and you should always be learning something new, learning a new skill, learning a new talent. That's what keeps you going, keeps you fresh. And this was certainly sort of just, I hadn't thought that ballroom dancing was going to be a particularly useful skill. But in the end, I mean, I lost a stone, lost 2 inches around the waist. I appreciate music in a way that I didn't before. Yeah. It's an entirely positive experience.
Do you ever look at somebody, and for example, when you're meeting somebody like a famous person, you go, you kind of judge them up and down, you go, I think I can impersonate you straight away, or is it just you?
No. I think it is the ones that have, like the Borises or the Farages, who are sort of way out of normal. They're the opposite of dull. They sort of cry out to be done. It's an instinct, impressions. And if somebody turns up who's got a silly voice, a funnier voice, an unusual voice, you think, oh, I could do that. Mm-hmm. But if it's a bland and a dull and an uninteresting voice, then you're not that.
Because I know you worked on Tony Blair a lot of the time.
I did, yeah. Well, that was to start with, you know, because it was, you know, he's got a very sort of rhythmical voice. Like, I just, you know, when he started out, it was all that stuff about, you know, tea for two, of course, tea for two, but also two for tea. And it took a while to get him, you know, that sort of the wideness and the sibilance, and I just think it's, you know, all that kind of stuff. And all that. And it took a while, but then, you know, he was around for, 9 or 10 years, so he became a big part of the act.
And of course, then there was John Prescott as well.
Well, there's John Prescott, but I don't think we need to go into that quite at the moment, because of course the whole thing with John Prescott is he was like frightened to allow any pauses, wasn't it? Just kept on going torrentially. Dollars have to make sense, you know. This is me you're talking to, and all the thing, and that, and he ran out of breath. But he reminded me of Les Dawson.
Yeah,
you know, I was in the doctor the other day. I said, "Doctor, I've got a steering wheel stuck on the end of my knob, and it's driving me nuts." So there we go.
Yes. In terms of your career, you know, you've worked on Bremner, Bird and Fortune with two comedians. What was that like, John Bird and
John those Fogg. Were some of the happiest days I've ever had. I mean, they were inspiring, they were wonderful. They just had such a wonderful synthesis of intelligence and humour, both of them. And, you know, John Wells once described John Bird as having this watchmaker's skill in taking a subject apart. And he had this wonderful instinct. And John Fortune was sort of just slightly lighter, more spiritual, perhaps more... he loved characters. John Bird was slightly more sceptical, but the two of them together and those interviews that they did were wonderful. I mean, they inspired me, they taught me, they mentored me, and it was the years that we spent doing Bremen Bird and Fortune were some of the happiest professionally, and certainly most fulfilling.
The one I remember is a sketch where it was the two of them that were sitting there and they were talking about something, and one guy said, "Britain, we make the sandwiches." That's what I remember from that one.
That's true.
It's a long time. So when you're doing, say, a topical live gig like tonight at Lennox Love House, how do you relax after it?
Oh, that's the easy part. It's relaxing before it. That's the hard part. Yeah. No, relaxing after it is fine. I mean, particularly here, because there's some lovely people here and very interesting people here. I'm looking forward to that part of it. But there's a couple of hours to go and I've got to get a bit more material into my head. Although the difference about Lennox Love, it's like a book. The difference about book festivals generally is that this isn't a big stand-up comedy show. I will do a bit of stand-up comedy, but there's more, it's in conversation about, like we've been talking now, and the audience asks questions. And I think what the audience get from this, it's not just stand-up comedy. It's they hear about, you know, what you think about things, what you're doing, what projects you're up to, what's coming up, what it was like doing X, Y, and Z. And it's a very, more interactive experience. And I mean, I suppose the older I get, that sort of I really enjoy it because it's an audience that's really engaged, and you know, you're interested in them, they're interested in you, and it isn't just a sort of we give the same show that I've given everywhere
else. Exactly. It's one of these new ones that you think, oh, it's new people coming every year. Yeah. You look at. So